Well, a big thanks to Dirin and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, April 16th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show with Rachel May Hannan at 7pm, Keith Tracy chats Champions League, Damien Lawler has the latest Gaelic Games news stories, while Nadine Doherty looks forward to the Ladies Football Championship. In swimming, we'll hear from Daniel Whiffen, who wrapped up a third gold at the Irish Open but missed out on his aim of breaking a world record. Plus, we'll round up the rest of today's sports headlines with some big news in rugby. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening, listeners. Great to have your company. Good evening, Keith Tracy. How's the nerves ahead of this evening?
They're okay. I'm sure as we get closer to the Arsenal-Real Madrid game, we'll get that little bit more wobbly, but yes, still quietly confident we'll get through.
Yeah, Keith Tracy, of course, an Arsenal fan for those who aren't aware. 3-0, you're grand. Nerves,
I don't know
nerves.
About that. Look,
you're
mate,
grand.
Rodrigo, Bellingham, Mbappe and Vinicius
Three
Jr.
Three shots in the Emirates, that's all. It's, don't worry
about
it. I know,
but they're capable of being a very different Damalani. And look, the Arsenal, I think Arsenal scored their three goals in about 14, 17 minutes, something like that. So this could be so comfortable for so long, and Real Madrid have the ability just to flick a switch. So confident, but not overly so.
Right, well, you're going to be sweating in the seat very shortly. Because we're going to be previewing that and reviewing last night's Champions League action and looking ahead at some Premier League action this evening as well. Newcastle hosting Crystal Palace. But elsewhere, some big news today. Pete Wilkins has resigned from his position as head coach of Connacht Rugby with immediate effect, with scrum coach Cully Tucker placed in charge until the end of the season. Wilkins had not been with the team for the last four games, with the Englishman having been on sick leave, according to the province. However, Connacht and the IRFU have confirmed this morning that he has now left his role. It is expected Australian Rod Sybe will be the province's new head coach for next season. The Brumbies assistant was already confirmed to be joining Connacht as a senior assistant coach for next season, though RTE Sport understands he's likely to be head coach. Last week, Connacht also confirmed the appointment of another Australian, Billy Millart, as their next general manager. New Zealand centre Rico Ioane has confirmed that he will join Leinster next season from Super Rugby team the Blues. A clause in his contract allows Ioane to skip one Super Rugby Pacific season with the Blues, and despite interest from Japan, he's opted to link up with Leo Cullen's side for a six-month period beginning in December of this year. The 28-year-old made his New Zealand debut in 2016 and has scored 37 tries and 81 caps before making the switch to Leinster. Ioane will be involved in the Rugby Championship for his country this ahead of a date with Ireland in Chicago as part of the November internationals. We can hear the reaction from down under. Here's Elliot Smith, rugby commentator with New Zealand News Talk ZB.
Game On Rugby.
Hi Shane, well, it's caught us all on the hop down here in New Zealand that Rico Ioane is heading to Leinster. Not many would have predicted that. In fact, it probably would have been the last place that many would have expected that he would end up. But he posted it on his social media and we were forced to check that we hadn't gone back in time a couple of weeks to April Fool's Day. But it is legitimate. And Rico Ioane will head to Leinster for a playing sabbatical, as we call them down here, at the conclusion of the All Blacks campaign at the end of 2025. It's a big move for him. We knew that he had a playing sabbatical, as we call them down here, in his contract when he signed with New Zealand Rugby a while back through until the end of the 2027 Rugby World Cup. There hadn't been too many whispers as to where he was going to go. We thought that maybe Japan and a contract with a club there might have been the likely scenario. His brother Akira, who used to play for the All Blacks, is now playing his rugby up there. Some players use it as a mental break and take a break away from rugby entirely and freshen up. But I thought like Japan, that would be the obvious move for Rico Ioane. Instead, he is following in Geordie Barrett's footsteps and heading to Leinster, which is a club that I'm sure would be the last on many people's list that Rico Ioane would be linked with, given the history with Ireland at the Rugby World Cup in 2023 and still surfaced, of course, again last year upon the release of Johnny Sexton's book and everything that Rico Ioane said to Johnny Sexton, the send-off that I'm not going to repeat here, but I'm sure many would remember it and have seen it written down in print in various articles since then. He was not afraid of sending Johnny Sexton home with a curt message or two, was Rico Ioane. Now he's going to be wearing the same colours that Johnny Sexton did for a lot of his club career. Remarkable how these things turn around. But I like it as a move for Rico Ioane. He's going to have to confront a lot of that with the media, with the fans when he gets to Leinster. I know, speaking to him last year on their All Blacks interview too, I spoke to him in a hotel room in Dublin ahead of that test match at the All Blacks one at the Aviva Stadium, and it did weigh on his mind heavily, the comments that he'd made, and he didn't want to stir the pot too much at that point. But it's something that he's going to have to confront when he gets to Leinster. I like it as a move for Rico Ioane. He's going to develop as a rugby player, and with an All Blacks patch on, the hope is that it builds his game heading to 2027, and maybe he can be like Jordy Barrett and add some extra strings to his bow, like we've seen with Leinster in the last few weeks and the performances that Jordy Barrett has put in. Rico Ioane, has struggled at times with centre. He's been the All Blacks' first choice outside centre for a number of years, but the feeling is there's still some areas of his game that he could improve on. The number one probably being distribution to his outsides and looking for that pass rather than going himself. So hopefully, alongside the players he's going to be rubbing shoulders with at Leinster, he can develop some of those skills but also turn into a pretty handy player for Leinster in the URC and the Champions Cup as well. Fascinating times, and as I said, it's a very surprising move from Rico Ioane, but credit to him, he's taking it and he's going to Leinster, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out.
Game on. Rugby.
So Leinster with Jordy Barrett and Rico Ioane, not a bad pair to have. Bernard Jackman will be on the show tomorrow chatting all things rugby, so do tune in for that. In swimming, Daniel Whiffen missed out on a new world record despite dominating the 1500-metre freestyle final at the Irish Open Swimming Championships at the National Aquatic Centre this afternoon. The double Olympic medalist won in a time of 14 minutes 42.71 seconds, more than half a minute ahead of his twin brother Nathan Whiffen, with Limerick's Dennis O'Brien in third. Whiffen publicly stated his aim was to break a world record at this year's Irish Open Championships and admitted to RT Sport that the 1500 metre was his best chance of doing so. Three gold medals, it's not a bad haul. He was speaking to John Kenny after today's final.
Daniel, 14.42, it's outside the world record, even outside the European record as well. It's a very busy week for you. What's your thoughts after that?
I'm actually, that's my favourite one so far. I'm absolutely off of steaming up. But it was my favourite one so far. Actually, for that time, is really good for now. Honestly, pretty surprised. At the start of the week, I think my 800 should have been way faster, but I'm happy with the 1500. I've been pretty tired yesterday after the 400 kind of killed me off. I'm sure you probably saw me dying at the end of it, but I'm pretty happy with that.
In the terms of the pacing, it was difficult to do it because you didn't have anybody else around you. I know the brothers stayed with you early, but you had to do this all on your own, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting used to it now. I've been doing it since I was like, I think I broke the Irish record for the first time when I was like 17, so what was it, 5 years I've been swimming by myself, so I'm getting used to it fine now, to be honest.
Okay. Overall, what do you think of the meets this week? I know you said you were back in training quite late in January. Has that told now in terms of a world record attempt here?
Honestly, I don't really know. I felt really good coming to this, and I said I wanted to have all four, the short course and long course, 800 and 1500 by LA. And that actually puts me pretty much on track for the good for this season. I was number two in the world that time, so I'm happy.
Yeah. So set up nicely for the rest of the season, the World Championships to come as well. Do you think you're in a good place now?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm never going to go into a World Championship, so I put myself into preparation to win gold. And I'd obviously love to retain both my titles in the 8 and 15. And I'm on the 4 to try and get a third. So that's what my goals are for the rest of the season. And, 4 months is a very long time. I only started training less than 4 months ago, and I'm already at 14.42, 7.41. So, I'd love to be able to go at least 10 seconds faster than both of them. So
in terms then of the meet itself, you've obviously raised the profile. You have Mon McSharry, Ellen Walsh, obviously rose the profile of Irish swimming. It's great to see such big crowds here as well to cheer all you on.
Yeah, it's amazing. I haven't actually gone up yet to sign the autographs to everybody who came the other day. It's because I was so busy trying to recover. But today I'm going to go up, I'm going to sign all the autographs, going to say hello to every single person who came to watch me swim. And I'm looking forward to meeting them all. And thank you very much for coming.
Game on. Swimming.
Daniel Whiffen speaking to John Kenny there as the Irish Open Swimming Championships conclude this evening at the National Aquatic Centre. Football is up next. Keith Tracy is standing by.
Game on.
Association football.
Now, Keith Tracy is with us to chat. Champions League. Real Madrid have announced their starting 11 for this evening's clash with Arsenal at the Bernabeu. Courtois starts in goal. Lucas Vazquez captains the side. Asensio, Rudiger, Alaba, Valverde, Tchouameni comes back into the side in place of the suspended Camavinga. Jude Bellingham, Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr., Kylian Mbappe. Dani Ceballos does return, but he's only fit enough to make the bench. Not a bad starting 11, Keith Tracy. Are we going to see just an all-out Madrid blitz right from the outset?
I think Madrid will want to start on the front foot. I think that goes without saying, but I don't think they'll throw the kitchen sink straight away, because I'm looking at Arsenal and I think, you know, you would assume Arsenal are so good defensively. It's over 472 days since Arsenal last conceded 3 times in a single game. So they will be very, very confident. But the one scenario I would love to avoid is to be 1-0 down going into the 70th minute and then Real Madrid get another one and you've got 15 minutes to go and the whole but the Bernabeu stands up and it's, you know, they're throwing the kitchen sink then. So I would love Arsenal to be on the front foot, go out there and try and get the next goal in the tie. And I think if Arsenal can go and do that, then it should be enough. You would imagine, even with Bellingham, Rodrigo, Vinicius Jr., even with Mbappe, you would think Arsenal's defence would have enough there. So, yeah, I think the big one for Arsenal is go and get the next goal. I'm hearing Rodrigo's father was seen outside the Bernabeu in the early hours of the morning praying for the comeback. So they're trying everything, Real Madrid, and the closer we get to kick-off, the more nervous I'm becoming.
Some divine intervention. Mm. Not bad having the big man on side. Can Arsenal replicate the energy and intensity that they showed in the first leg?
Yeah, I think they have to. I think you have to go about it in a different way. Obviously, when the ball goes out of play, you're not rushing over to get it back in. You try and disconnect the crowd because, as I say, Real Madrid will want a really, really quick start. But Real Madrid have only kept one clean sheet so far in the Champions League this season. That's in 13 Champions League games. They've only kept the one clean sheet, and that was against Brest, who at European level aren't the best team in the world. So, look, I don't think Real Madrid have been at their best in this tournament, and I keep expecting them to catch fire. And even though they haven't been at their best, they've been limping along. But I do see a scenario where Arsenal can put them to the sword, but I also see a scenario where Real Madrid just absolutely rip up the rule book and drag themselves back into
this game.
So
you could see a scenario where it could play out like the first leg? That comprehensive?
Maybe not as comprehensive, but look, if Real Madrid are there and Arsenal are making the game nice and stale and just, you know, it's drifting along, Real Madrid are going to have to do something. They're going to have to chuck the kitchen sink at some point, and that's when I think Arsenal would be able to hit them. And look, I'm obviously an Arsenal fan, but Bukayo Saka coming back into the team, I was telling everybody that would listen to me that give the young lad time. He's never missed a whole load of football. He's done that now, and he's come back and he's just hit the ground running, scored a goal as soon as he came back against Real Madrid in the first leg, looked really, really good. So I think Saka up against Alaba, I know we haven't confirmed the Arsenal team just yet, but Alaba will be playing left back and you would imagine Saka will be right wing for Arsenal. So I think that will be a key battle, and also to just encourage the Real Madrid fans a little bit more. 24 out of the 52 games this season that Real Madrid have played, they've scored 3 times or more. So that's almost half of the games they played this season. But they do concede, and that's where he thinks Arsenal can get some joy.
Yeah, no Eder Militao, Danny Carvajal, Ferland Mendy. However, you flip that to Arsenal. I know Gabriel Jesus and Kai Havertz are out, but Calafiori, Tomiyasu, but importantly, Gabriel. So both teams are missing their key defensive clogs, really. And again, you go back to the stars that Real Madrid have. Like, would you be concerned defensively for Arsenal?
I would be, and I was really, really concerned in the first leg. Obviously, that was when Gabriel came out, and I didn't think we'd see it as good a version of Saliba as we have seen, because Gabriel and Saliba, for me, the relationship was just as important as the individuals. But since Gabriel's gone out, Kiwior's gone in there, Timber's obviously playing right back, but I think the lads that have come into this Arsenal team are making an impression. They're not just there to make up the numbers. The likes of Timber, I know it's his second season, but I think it was his ACL early on, and Arsenal didn't see him for the season. Even Kiwior is, if you'd have asked me in the first leg, can they keep Real Madrid to a clean sheet? I'd have said no. There's no way Arsenal keep Bellingham, Junior, Rodrigo and Mbappe. There's no way you keep them lads quiet for 90 minutes. They've managed to do that, but it's still only half time in the tie. And Mbappe got sent off in the weekend, so he's well rested. I know Ancelotti rested a couple of other players, but I think if Arsenal can get through the first 20 minutes unscathed, I'd be feeling a lot more confident. But as I said, flick of a switch, this could all change.
Well, Jude Bellingham is feeling somewhat confident. We can hear from him now.
I think what makes us confident is the quality we have, the history of the club, the fans that will turn up and give everything in, on the night, the aura of the Bernabeu in these Champions League nights. That's always something. I think we still felt like, even though we played probably as bad as we possibly could in a game like that, we still had chances, weirdly, and still had moments where we felt like we could have capitalised a bit more, and still we had a few chances where it felt like maybe if we just increased our level and was a bit more attentive to a few things that they did really well, we can be in it. You know, I think we're not stupid, but also we're confident in the ability we have. And the second part was about, what was that, sorry? Oh yeah, not really. No, we know the quality they had. I think the free kicks were surprising. I've not seen Deck do that before, to be fair. I knew he could take set pieces really well, the corners and stuff, but I'd never seen him do that with the free kicks. So fair play to him. That was probably the only thing, though, really. We knew they're a really good team. We knew that they have a really good manager. They're going to be organised. And yeah, there was a lot of things that were really impressive for them, but nothing that we didn't expect. They're a top level team.
Declan Rice practicing his free kicks as well at the weekend. Yeah, was that for show? That was for show, wasn't it?
Probably for show. But the force one is unbelievable. But I think it's a Courtois mistake. I don't think you should ever be able to whip the ball around the wall and get it back in. The goalkeeper should allow for, you know, the curve of the ball, and it shouldn't be able to happen. And the second one is,
it's McElroy-esque.
If you were to pick the ball up, Shane, and walk to the where you want to put it, that's exactly where Declan Rice would have wanted to put it. And look, what Bellingham is saying is right. Probably the two free kicks is what made the Arsenal performance look so good. And I'm sitting here saying Arsenal won 3-0 in the first leg. Yeah, we missed a whole host of chances. Courtois, although he's conceded 3 goals, probably walked off with his head held high because he made a couple of decent saves. Alaba saved one off the line as well. So the 3-0, although I'm very, very hopeful it's enough, it might not be. And maybe Real Madrid just, you know, took their medicine, got out of there with 3-0, and they'll be hopeful that they can do enough tonight.
Well, let's hear from the Arsenal manager, Mikel Arteta.
I understand that is part of their history, and they haven't the right to be talking about these kind of scenarios. Ours is very different, and our mindset, preparation, our thoughts, and how we're going to have the best chance to be better than them in the aspects that are crucial in the game, because we're going to try to take the game to places very different to our intentions, and if we do that, we're going to have a good chance to win the game. The same mindset, the mindset to win, to be brave, to be dominant, to be determined, and to have the conviction that we can be better than them and win the game.
That's going to be huge, mindset. They need to be brave this evening, Arsenal. Like, even with a 3-0 lead, they still, if that makes sense, they still need to be brave in the Bernabeu.
Of course they do, and it's the most human thing in the world when you get there to think, you know what, we'll just step back. I don't need to run forward as hard as I would, because I'm more worried about them not scoring than us, than Arsenal going down the other end and scoring. So I think the mindset that Mikel Arteta is trying to get into the team is, look, it's nil all. Let's go and try and win this game of football. If Arsenal lose 1-0, so be it, but go out there and try and win the game in the next 90 minutes. And look, it might take extra time, it might take penalties, but for Arsenal to go through, I'd rip your hands off now. And you know, that's probably a strange thing to say with a 3-0 lead, but it's nowhere, they're like no other team, Real Madrid and the Bernabeu, especially in Europe. They're just a different animal at times.
Yeah, well, from one Colosseum to another. Bayern Munich were the last Champions League visitors to beat Inter at San Siro, and they must repeat that feat in order to reach this season's semi-finals. Late breakaway goal from substitute David Fratesi earned Inter a vital 2-1 win in the quarter-final first leg in Munich. Evenly poised, this should hopefully be a cracking contest.
This will be a cracker, yeah. Bayern Munich, obviously, 2-1 down from the first leg. There's going to be a whole host of talent on the pitch. I'm a big fan of Lautaro Martinez, 7 goals already in the Champions League. Marcus Thuram is another one who is probably still a bit raw, but he's an absolute handful. And when he gets his pace up and is running into the channel, he's a very, very tough man to deal with. They're a strong team, Inter, and they've got some brilliant individual players. I love DeMarco, the left back. Barella Fratesi, as you mentioned, they've kept 7 clean sheets in the group phase, Inter Milan, so if they can do that again tonight, it'll be enough for them. But look, with the likes of Harry Kane, Elise, Musiala is another young attacking midfielder that I really like, and Alphonso Davies. I won't generally highlight left backs as a goal threat, but Alphonso Davies is somebody who can get up there. Kimmich is one that can keep the game ticking over, whether that's in the middle of the pitch or at right back. And Gnabry is an ex-Arsenal player who just seemed to have gone from strength to strength. So Bayern Munich only 2 league defeats in 29 games, so they'll be confident as well that they won't get turned over. But the San Siro is a very, very difficult place to go and play our football.
Okay, before we chat about last night's matches, Premier League, and maybe even touch on League of Ireland, call it for me. Firstly, Inter Bayern, who's going to progress?
I think that's going to go all the way. I think Bayern will win in the 90 minutes, but we're going to see extra time and penalties, and then that's a toss of a coin. So I'll just predict penalties in that one, Shane. I won't predict the winner.
I'll allow it. In the other match, I'm demanding you pick a winner out of this one.
I think Arsenal lose in the 90 minutes, but go through. And I think we go through in the 90 minutes, okay. maybe a 1-0 loss, maybe even a 2-1 loss. I just hope Arsenal can score a goal, and then that's really throwing the gauntlet down to Real Madrid. So I think a loss, but go through overall in the tie.
Okay. Last night, where PSG deserved winners in Birmingham.
I think so.
I'm aware they did lose the contest 3-2, but deserve to through, progress. Yeah.
No, I understand the question. Yeah, I think overall over the two legs, PSG were unbelievable, especially in Paris. I thought they were really, really good. They played the game in moments. They went 2-0 up, and I was looking at that thinking that's a game done and dusted. But for Aston Villa to drag themselves back into the game, the Tielemans goal, the deflection, it's a little bit fortuitous, but the McGinn goal after that, again, there's a little bit of a deflection, but take nothing away from the strike. And one person that I think deserves a little bit of a pat on the back is Marcus Rashford. He made a difference last night. And I'm listening to Aston Villa fans in the Premier League saying, oh, well, he's doing this and he's doing that. And I seen an improvement in his attitude, but not quite in his performance just yet. But I have to say, I thought Rashford last night for Konza's goal was unbelievable. Little nutmeg, little swivel
of
the hips.
Everyone seemed to stop.
Yeah,
like, I know he even looked at the Lionel.
But I think that's what makes it look so good, is because everybody else just seems to slow down, and he seems the composure to pick everybody out. I thought it was brilliant, and Unai Emery will be getting a big, big pat on the back as well, because it was on a downward trajectory, Marcus Rashford, but he's wrestled it back now and he seems to be on the way up again.
If you were Marcus Rashford, would you want to stay at Aston Villa and still regroup somewhat, even if that means an extra season? I know he's only on loan, or would you say, right, I can do that, I can go back to United, or is that ship sailed?
I would assume that ship has sailed at Manchester United. Sometimes you're in a club, and I know he's still a Manchester United player, but the feeling is just not there. Some of the performance, or these last couple of performances I've seen in Old Trafford in particular, the work rate wasn't there, the smile wasn't there, the desire, the fire, everything that you shouldn't be able to question about a professional footballer, you could question about Marcus Rashford when he was playing at Manchester United. But that fire seems to be reignited now, and playing in Champions League football in the quarterfinals of the Champions League is big, big games in deep water, and he's got himself back into the English team. So he seems to have found that bounce in his step again, and I've seen millions and millions of footballers fall out of love with football, but it's brilliant to see somebody fall back in love with it, which is what seems to have happened.
Yeah, no, that's very, very nicely put. You were keeping an eye on Borussia Dortmund at Barcelona as well. 3-1 to Borussia Dortmund on the night, 5-3 Barcelona progressed. Was there any doubt in your mind that Barca were going to progress, even watching it unfold?
Yeah, fairly similar to the Aston Villa game. There was little moments where you thought maybe possibly could be something here, but you know, Borussia Dortmund, they got their noses in front. Pascal Gross scored another goal that was later disallowed for offside. But Dortmund were really good in parts of the game. But Barcelona, like Lewandowski, his movement with Rafinha on the left wing, the way they interchanged, young Lamine Yamal wasn't quite at the races, which is not something you can say about the young man too often. So some very, very light criticism for here there. Not quite at the races, but you know, I think everybody fears this Barcelona team. So, so strong with the class of Lewandowski and Rafinha already toppling Messi's records in a Barcelona short in the Champions League. So, Gavi and Frankie de Jong in the middle just dictating things. So, yeah, for my money, Barcelona, PSG look on a different level to everybody else. But that's probably my Arsenal bias or Arsenal pessimism taking Arsenal out of that.
Pessimism. That's pessimism. All football fans are naturally pessimistic, and I can assure you of that for many years in the League of Ireland First Division. In the Premier League this evening, Ruben Amorim has, by the way, confirmed Onana will start in tomorrow's Europa League clash against Lyon, and Joshua Zirkzee is out for the rest of the season with a hamstring injury. Newcastle can go to third spot, leapfrog Nottingham Forest if they defeat or even draw against Palace this evening. Would you fancy Newcastle to finish third in the Premier League?
Yeah, I do. I think once they won the EFL Cup, it was all about the reaction. Was there going to be a bit of a hangover? Would they be happy to settle what they've already achieved for? Happy to settle for what they've achieved already this season? But no, they've won their three games in a row. I did the commentary against Manchester United on the weekend, and it was 1-1 after the first 45 minutes, Shane. But Manchester United were pummeled, absolutely pummeled. And I used the word embarrassing the second 45. It was like men against boys. Newcastle were head and shoulders above them. So I expect Newcastle to win, but Crystal Palace are a team. They're a very, very difficult team to beat. I mean, on the road already this season, they've beaten Fulham, Manchester United, West Ham, Brighton. They're difficult places to go and get 3 points. So if Newcastle, if St James's Park is bouncing as it usually is, maybe the emotion of the weekend against Manchester United, maybe the Geordies might be a little bit subdued, but I would still imagine that Isak, Barnes, Murphy, Gordon will have enough to get them over the line. And the three lads in midfield, Tonali, Joe Linton, Bruno Guimaraes, I absolutely love them. There's a brilliant balance of class, a little bit of aggression in there as well. And, you know, I've said it already about Joe Linton, probably the most un-Brazilian Brazilian player you've ever seen, but I would pick him every single week because he just brings that desire and running power that you need in the middle.
Yeah, a bit of hunger. Okay, we will keep an eye on team news from Arsenal, Inter and Bayern Munich between now and 7 o'clock. Keith Tracy, thank you. We are turning our attention to Gaelic games after the break.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, RTÉ Sports' Damien Lawler joins us now with the big Gaelic games talking points. Damien, exciting times for hurling fans as we edge closer to provincial championship action. The Leinster Championship takes centre stage on Saturday, while on Sunday we have action in Munster with All-Ireland champions Clare clashing with newly crowned league champions Cork. Meanwhile, Tipperary host Limerick in Thurles. There is something special about the Munster Championship. It seems to grow in popularity each season. What is it about Munster that just makes it stand out so much?
Certainly the round-robin system over the last few years, Shane, has catapulted the Munster Championship to new levels. When I was growing up down in Tip, you know, it was still an unbelievable competition. It was a competition that everybody wanted to see. It was a competition that probably, you know, even when counties got out of Munster, they were nearly almost half content with it, you know. But the round-robin series has just brought us to a different dimension. The games are spectacular. The crowds are unbelievable. The atmosphere has gone to new proportions. You know, I've been in the Gaelic grounds there, particularly in the last couple of seasons, and just maybe the emergence of Limerick as a force as well has helped drag it to new levels. So spectacular stuff all around. You know, the stuff we witnessed in Augusta there last Sunday night, from a hurling perspective, the excitement is no less on most given Sundays in the Munster Hurling Championship. It probably just brings out mad raw passion among maybe tribes in the province as well. The viewing figures are massive. The crowd numbers are spectacular. The games are absolutely epic. And I think it's always been like that, only we see more of it now, Shane. And you're off to a belter there this weekend again. So there's no doubt about it. Growing popularity. It's the golden ticket for the GEA. No question of that. That and maybe the Ulster Football Championship as well. But it's the one that the GEA would be very, very thankful that they have in their ranks.
Okay, well, Limerick will certainly be looking to hit the ground running after an underwhelming league campaign. And we can hear from their former captain now, but still a key part of the setup, Declan Hannan, looking ahead to their clash with Tip in Thurles.
You know, Tip are, you know, in fine form. I know the last league final, but, you know, prior to that, they've been, you know, probably one of the farm teams in the country. So we're under no illusion, I suppose, of the test that we have ahead of us. But, you know, looking forward, it's great. Back to the simple stadium, the Munster Championship. It's where we're going there as a child and being in awe of the whole thing. So, you know, to be involved at all is fantastic.
Having watched you as a young kid coming onto that senior setup, taking frees at a very, very early stage, playing in the forwards, playing in different positions, you've always been the ultimate team player. I suppose not being captain this year, Declan, does it have any impact on you whatsoever? Because you've even when you're in the pocket, you're always just winning dirty ball, setting up lads for better positions. So you've always been a team player first and foremost anyway.
Yeah, look, it hasn't made any difference really. I don't think it's like, we play a team sport, like we play, there's 36 members of a panel, and it can never be about an individual. Like, I mean, that's, you're never going to be successful if that's the case, like, you know. And I think we're lucky in Limerick, we have 36 lads who are all about the team and have always been about the team. You know, maybe that's been a contributing factor to the success in the last number of years. not sure, obviously had a nice time as being in the captaincy role or anything like that, but I had a great help, like, you know, even from Keane now, who's taken over, is no better man to just, you know, it was quite seamless, the whole transition. But like, so William, and so I could name 10 or 12 lads that have just been leaders throughout the years and have contributed massively on the field and off the field, which is important as well. So no, I haven't noticed a whole bit of difference. Training hasn't gotten any easier anyway since the change of the captaincy. Like, so no, at the end of the day, like, it's I suppose it's what you do on the training field and what you do in match day in that, that's the most important.
Absolutely. And I know we're on the cusp of a new championship now, but was there much time for looking back on last year? I know it didn't go your way late on, but there were fine margins as well. And I thought, you know, you bowed out with the shields raised anyway, with a great, great fight back. And there just wasn't much in it, Declan.
No, sure. Looking, there never is much in it in the majority of games in the championship. So like, teams are quite evenly balanced, I think. But yeah, it was obviously a sickener. Like, when you get to the latter stages of any championship, it's always hard when you bow out. But you know, on the day, Cork were full value for the win. Like, they took their opportunities and we didn't. And you know, a couple of small things that we would have liked to have done better, but you know, on the day we didn't. And you're going to get punished every single time if you're just a bit off. And you know, Cork did that, and fair play to them. So yeah, it took a while to get over. But look, you went back to your club, went back to the club championship, and you know, what can you do is only get back on the horse and come back this year and see how you get on.
Declan Hannan speaking there with thanks to Ayr. So, Damien, will Limerick respond well from 2 league wins and 6 and indeed emerge from Munster?
Yeah, I think they will. I think they're just not long back from a training camp in Portugal. They didn't really play more than half their settled team during the Allianz League. Yeah, a couple of results went maybe a little bit astray. Some people raised doubts about maybe the legginess creeping into the team, but still, though, you have to say that they'll have more than enough to come out of Munster to be one of the three teams. I think there's steely determination there to avenge the wrongs of last year in their own minds, you know, and try and get back and win a Munster title and win an All-Ireland title. Now, it won't be simple to do that. It won't be simple to do both, and I'm not sure about the prospect of a team in Munster winning both Munster and All-Ireland. You'd really want the wind blowing in your back the whole way to do that. Ironically, Shane, with Clare, they've not won Munster for a long, long, long time, and they've not had a Munster Senior Player of the Year within their ranks for a long, long time either. And I know, talking to a few of them over the close season, Munster title was massively on their agenda since relegated from Allianz League Division 1. But as we heard there from Declan in that interview with Ayr, it was nothing between the teams. And, you know, could Clare have had one eye maybe on Munster? You know, could Limerick have had one eye on that training camp and just getting everybody back for the championship? I think we're going to find out very, very soon. Certainly for the likes of Tipperary, you've got Limerick and Cork in your first two games. That's before April even ends. That's a very, very tough opening draw. And then Waterford are quietly creeping on under the radar, would be the word I'd say, Shane. Not a word said about them, but they're division, you know, Division 1B champions, and they beat Offaly in, you know, in a fair canter there at one stage, even though Offaly found a way back in that game. So there's not a word being said about Waterford. I have to put a little label on them now. They could be a surprise package. Clare have been written off by some people, but I think they haven't even got going yet. Limerick have a lot to prove after last year. Tip, you know, had a couple of heavy defeats last season. They've managed to seal over, you know, those gaps to a large extent, but they were found maybe, I suppose, the league final against Cork to be a gap too much for them. And there's still a few question marks to be answered there. Whereas Cork's biggest problem would be just dealing with Cork people putting hype on them and media people putting hype on them, because they just look to be absolutely outrageous. But you have to caution. Look, I'm probably contradicting myself here, Shane. It's still only April, but sure, the championship will be over in a few months. It's not like we're going to September like we once were. So it's going to be an unbelievable battle in Munster, and it won't be simple in Leinster either.
No, it most certainly won't. In Leinster on Saturday, Wexford play Antrim, Kilkenny host Galway, and Dublin welcome Offaly to Parnell Park. Offaly, of course, promoted to Division 1A in the league, albeit defeated in a league final. But the faithful county are still very much riding the crest of a wave. Here's their captain, Kieran Burke, speaking to Damien.
Yeah, you can feel it. Like, you go into training, there's a bit of a buzz around the place. Everyone loves going training. There's great morale in the camp. So yeah, like, you feel it. You feed off the energy around the county every day. You're going around, you kind of feel it, that everyone feels good. So yeah, let's just try to bring that into championship and use it as in the as energy to perform in championship.
You have a right good management set up there as well. There's a lot of good hurling people there, and I suppose that has to give any player confidence when you look to the sideline and you see six or seven lads there who know hurling inside out.
Yeah, definitely. Like when you're listening to Brendan Maher or Shane McAllen, like you're going to listen to them whenever they speak. So having them on the line, and then like Johnny Kelly as well, the man's a genius. Like, see what he done with Boris Lee and Portumna and all the other clubs he was involved with. So look, it's a top class management team, from the nutrition to the S&C right to Johnny as manager. It's class.
Leinster Championship's coming up. Again, that's a different level again. Is it something to be really embraced and look forward to, and that you guys belong here at the top table now and you're ready to go? And on any given day, Offaly Hurling can express itself to a really, really high level too, Kieran.
Yeah, I suppose it's about getting that consistency as well, and not really allow ourselves not to perform for 45 minutes or 50 minutes, was to try bring that consistency to every game, and yeah, just really go out and express yourself and enjoy it. Like, that's what it's all about, to be back up in the Leinster Championship since 2018. It's massive for us to be back up there, and we're really looking forward to it.
When Waterford maybe got a attack of a few points, would that experience stand to you, do you think, going forward now? Maybe just stall the momentum, break up play a small bit, get your shape again?
Yeah, I think so. Like, when you're playing these top teams, to have the experience over the last few years, like our Waterford have played in all Ireland finals, so we're learning on the job and learning every day we go out. So yeah, to play these teams, it's invaluable experience going into championship, and I think even playing in the league final, like, it's probably worth two or three training sessions to you alone. So it's great preparation for championship.
Damien, what's been key to Offaly's success, and can they find the consistency to secure a top three finish in Leinster?
Yeah, certainly a big talking point. Can they be one of the three teams to emerge from Leinster? They're an outside bet in many people's eyes, but they could be a tasty little option there for to sneak out of Leinster too. They've not been in the top tier for quite some time, but they're back now again in Division 1 hurling next season. What's been the reason? Been a number of factors, Shane. A nice generation of hurlers came on together around the same time. They got development work under 14. The proper structures are put in place in Offaly Hurling. And then the likes of Michael Dignan came in as chair and drove it on too. Leo O'Connor did great work with minor, and under 20 teams. Started off during COVID. They had back-to-back campaigns running concurrently there almost at one stage. They lost an All-Ireland minor final, but they won an All-Ireland under-20 title. You know, they've got promotion back to Division 1 now proper. They played a league final against Waterford in Cork. I think if you look at it, some of their schools' systems are performing better too. You know, even around the county in general, the footballers got promoted to Division 2. Mickey Harrison done a good job there. Their Camogie team won last Sunday in Thurles. So there's a definite feel-good factor, and you can't discount that either. But at the same time, a great generation of hurlers arrived at one time. The likes of Brian Dignan and Kieran Burke have been there. You know, even Ben Camilli, all these guys, Killian Kiley, stalwarts there, but they've an influx of younger players around them now, and they're starting to look a little bit dangerous. Screeny will be back now around the scene for the senior championship. He had been carrying an injury there for the last couple of months. It'll be great to have him back for hurling sake alone. Very similar to the buzz that Shane O'Donnell will recreate if he gets back this season as well. So, one to watch, definitely. They will need to improve their consistency. Waterford did kind of blow them out of the park in a period there in the first half, but to their credit, they did rally. And as Kieran was saying there, they've hurling intelligence all around them there on the sideline. They've Brendan Maher, Seamus Callanan, Mark Maher's there too. Johnny Kelly's the manager. They have a really good setup, and I think it'll be ones to watch. They start their campaign then away to Dublin in Parnell Park, and people maintain that Parnell Park actually suits Dublin more so than Croke Park. It might suit Offaly as well, so it's going to be really, really close to watch. And another slugfest then on Saturday, and I'll be at it working as well on the sideline, Shane, will be Kilkenny and Galway in Nolan Park. And you're talking about Munster being a belter. Well, that's a rivalry and a half as well, and it's a great one to start the Leinster Championship. So excitement all around. We've had primarily football for the first two weekends of the Championship, and now the hurling swings in the town, Shane.
Well, there is a bit of excitement in football this weekend. We've Ulster, Munster and Connacht Provincial Championship action. Mayo travel to Leitrim for a Connacht semi-final in what is going to be a landmark weekend for Aidan O'Shea.
Aidan O'Shea is in line to make his 200th league and championship appearance for the county, and that is simply phenomenal. And whether you think the man is a great player, or whether you think he's out of position, or whether you think he should be playing a different sport because he has the physique to do a lot of things, There's no denying his service to the county and what a talisman he has been for the county, what resilience he has to keep showing up time after time. He's there since 2009, Shane. He scored 5 goals in his first 6 games for the county. I don't always believe that he has been used in the right positions at the right times. There have been times when they put him in full forward, but the ball hasn't come in. There have been times then when he's been held around the middle of the field and they've pumped the ball in full forward line. So I don't believe they've always got it right. But what a tasty left foot that man has. He's a consistent player at club level the whole time. And it's just a staggering achievement for him. The longevity of that now, especially when you factor in the heartbreaking defeats that he and his teammates have had to countenance along the way. But look, he's broke records along the way. Andy Moran held a lot of the records before he did. But it's a big, big occasion for him. But I think he'd be more concerned about his team winning and trying to reach another Connacht final. And, you know, he's captained his country in international rules. He's been a 3-time All-Star. He's had many good days as well as the heartbreaking defeat. So one of the great characters of the game, Shane, and by God, we need as many people bringing a bit of colour into Gaelic games as is possible.
We most certainly do. OK, great stuff as always, Damien. Lots to look forward to this weekend.
Game on. Ladies football.
Now Nadine Doherty joins us to chat ladies football and review last weekend's league finals and indeed look forward to championship action this weekend. Nadine, let us begin our conversation looking back on an emphatic win for Kerry over Armagh, the Division 1 final. Kerry securing a record 13th National Football League Division 1 crown with a comprehensive victory over Armagh at Croke Park. 4-14 to 11 points the final scoreline. Are you surprised by the winning margin?
Yeah, massively, Shane. I had a feeling that Kerry would get over the line, I said last week, but I honestly felt it would be by the minimum or a couple of points. They deserved it. At times, especially in the last quarter, it felt like a 15-point win. You know, it had taken on the nature almost of a challenge game. But Armagh were competitive. I don't think there's a 15-point difference between these teams, and Mark Burke, the Kerry manager, alluded to that afterwards. But look, there were a few things, Shane. I felt that Kerry looked, they just had way more in the legs, so I feel they probably timed their training and their workload to perfection. I think tactically they got it right, which we'll go through in a minute. And I just think for Armagh, it's probably only the second or third time in a year since Amy Mackin got injured, and I know we always come back to her, but it was really apparent, and I think they really, really missed her. And the last time that happened was in the same fixture against Kerry last season when they exited the championship. So, you know, they look at that, they'd be very disappointed. As I said, you know, the game's contest was over after, you could say, 10 minutes of the second half. But Armagh played till the end, Shane. They kept plugging away, but they were chasing possession at that stage in the game. As I said, it had taken on that feel of the challenge game. And yeah, look, they won't be, obviously, when you go to Croke Park and you lose by 15 points in a league final, they won't be pleased, Armagh, but there are a lot of positives and they will take a lot of positives from it. And I think, look, with them, you look at, they have a lot of Clonairn players, Shane. They, you know, they have a lot of players who've been involved with college, with club. It's been long, they haven't had a break, and you know, the legs did look a little bit heavy, but I think for Armagh they'll go back, and I think they look at it tactically, because I just felt they weren't quick enough getting rid of that ball, and they allowed Kerry to retreat back. And if you, when you watch the game back, you know, Kerry had so much space every time they went in attack, whereas Armagh were just recycling. It was cluttered. They couldn't get through. And that was the biggest difference, I think, between the two teams, was just that pace.
Looking back at that pace, and I suppose when you do break it down, what are, or who made the difference in the end?
Yeah, well, I think overall, Kerry, and we talk about this all the time, they played football very simply, Shane. They kicked the ball. They kicked the ball long, they kicked the ball short, and if they didn't kick the ball, they moved it at such pace, and they always had somebody coming off the shoulder, which Armagh did as well. But the difference being, when the Kerry players were coming off the shoulder, wow, they were going full tilt, they were going at such pace, and they just had that. They, again, I think they would have studied Armagh, and they isolated their full forward line of Jaden Lucy and Danielle O'Leary inside to great effect, and they just kicked the ball fast, Shane, and they moved it at pace. And O'Leary especially, in particular, every time she got the ball, she looked like scoring a goal. And she was just able to exploit that space that was in behind the Armagh full back line. So they played it brilliantly. And look, you also look at individuals. I think you look at Kerry performances in particular, because we're looking at Armagh players who've been very effective to date. You know, Eve Lavery for Armagh has been, she hasn't played all of the league, but when she's played, she's looked very sharp at half forward. And she was completely outplayed by Aisling O'Connell. Ailish Lynch was exceptional at cornerback. She completely nullified Niamh Reid, who was another fantastic player for Armagh. She got on the team of the league this year. Kayleigh Cronin was unbelievable. Sheafer O'Shea pulled the strings around the middle. And I think Anna Galvin has to get a huge mention, because she essentially was dealing with Caroline O'Hanlon in midfield and Blahi Mackin at times. And she just seemed to be up and down that pitch nonstop. And of course, Danielle O'Leary, she came up with the score. She got player of the game. So, you know, overall, Kerry were unbelievable. But those players in particular, I thought one-on-one battles and just their tactical awareness, they made a massive, massive difference for Kerry.
Okay, you mentioned obviously Armagh won't be too downbeat over this and they will regroup. And they've had a largely good league campaign. But for Kerry, perfect platform for the Kingdom to continue that confidence to go back-to-back this summer?
Yeah, Shane, you know, and I wouldn't have predicted it at the start of the year. I don't think many people would have predicted a league final and winning that by 15 points, considering the, you know, the number of players who have left. What I must say is, you know, I've spoken about him a lot, but Mark Burke has done a fantastic job in there, Shane. He's come in, he's kept the group very much together. But Kerry are playing better football this year than they have done over the last 3 years, which saw them build a platform to go to that All-Ireland final a few times and win it, obviously, last year. You know, I know the All-Ireland Cup isn't given out now in April, but they looked really, really good. And they looked really good in Croke Park, Shane, you know, and that is where it's going to be won and lost. They're definitely, definitely now the form team, as Armagh were going into the final. But yeah, Kerry, very nice to watch. And listen, Sheafer O'Shea is fit and she is just massive for them. You know what we talk about, Caroline O'Hanlon and the Mackins are for Armagh. Sheafer O'Shea for Kerry is just, she's an unbelievable player and she's matured a lot. And I mean, if she keeps this form going, you know, you're looking at her being up there for player of the year.
Okay.
Really phenomenal.
Well, the teams of the league were announced today by the LGFA. No surprise, Kerry, who of course were crowned champions, lead the way with 8 players. Runners up Armagh have 4 players selected. The remaining spots in the team go to Waterford and Dublin. Dublin's Leah Caffrey and Waterford finishing 3rd in Division 1. And that fine form sees captain and midfielder Emma Murray earning a spot in the team alongside free scoring forward Kellyanne Hogan. In Division 2, Galway defeated Cork in the Division 2 decider. Cork had a slight advantage at the break, low scoring first half, evenly balanced, but Galway surged in the second half as expected.
Yeah, I fancied them, Shane. They've danced through that Division 2. And before a ball was kicked, I suppose we would have predicted this league final. Yeah, look, I expect both teams, Shane, to be there or thereabouts when it comes to the last 4, the last 8 maybe of the championship. Galway, listen, Cork were very good. They were excellent. They moved the ball well. And when you have Katie Quirk in your team, you're always going to be within a chance of winning every single game you're involved in. But listen, Galway, you were always waiting for them to power through in a sense. And they did. They just got scores when they needed. And those 2 goals, obviously, you know, that got them over the line. But they played lovely football. And as I always say about Galway, you know, really excited to see them in the championship. And I just love for Galway because I feel they have the players like Kerry. I'd love to see Galway play a Kerry style of football, and I think that is what would get them over the line. For me, they're just still a little too tentative, a little too defensive. But if they, I suppose, throw off the shackles now that the sun is out, they'll very much be there or thereabouts. And I don't think playing Division 2 football will make a difference for either of these teams. Because of how they performed, they absolutely cantered through it. And Galway, listen, they won up with 100% record. So they'd be very, very happy with that.
Elsewhere, Cavan defeated Wexford in the Division 3 decider, and Antrim overcame Ulster rivals Fermanagh in Division 4. Looking ahead at championship action this coming Saturday, Dublin against Meath, or should I say Meath against Dublin, in Park Tulch and Navan, 2 o'clock throw-in. How much does the Leinster Championship mean to both of these sides, Nadine?
I don't know, Shane, to be honest. I feel with Dublin, you could look at it in a sense, they've won so many, there's a motivation there to keep going and keep breaking records. Or they could just look at it in a sense as, you know, more competitive challenge games. It's getting game time into players. getting game time into squad players. And then you look at Meath. I think for Meath, it's probably more of a focus, to be honest, because they're looking at, I suppose you could say with Meath, in a sense, they are on their rebuilding process, even though it's only a couple of years since they won those back-to-back All-Ireland. So I think for Leinster, they would see that as building momentum. There's a huge rivalry there. So, I mean, regardless if it's Leinster or it's a round robin championship game, there's no love lost between these two teams. There's a huge amount of respect. But when they go out against each other, you know, there's a massive contest there. So it's, I fancy Dublin, even though Meath are at home, and Meath have shown very well. They kind of had a blip there around round four, round five. And, you know, at that time, they had that huge defeat against Dublin by, I don't know, it was almost 20 points, I think. But a lot of football has been played there. And, you know, they lost Kildare as well the week before. They just seem to be going through a bad patch. So I'd say all that is gone now. Dublin, if Carlo Rowe plays, they're in a stronger position. It depends who they rest. It depends who they put out. But I still fancy them because they built up a good bit of momentum in those last few rounds of the league. And I think it'll be a great game, Shane, I do. Because, you know, this rivalry, it's not that historical one like in the men's game. It hasn't been born out of that Dublin-Meath rivalry. It's very much from that first All-Ireland that Meath came out and absolutely shocked Dublin. And there's still a bit of hurt there, for sure. So it's definitely one, if people are tuning in, it'll be a good one to tune into.
Okay, well, you can watch that match on a pay-per-view stream on the Leinster LGFA webpage. Hopefully it is a cracking contest in Proctology. 2 o'clock throw-in in Navan. For now, Nadine Tardy, great chatting as always.
Game on. Ladies football.
Now, just before we leave you, team news in from Arsenal ahead of their clash at the Bernabeu. David Raya in goal, Timber, Saliba, QVR, Lewis Skelly, Thomas Partey, Declan Rice, Odegaard, Saka, Martinelli and Marino up top as the starting 11. That is all we have time for. Tomorrow's Game On features Bernard Jackman on rugby, Aoife Murray chats Camogie and Jeff Shepherd has his eye on America. Big thanks to our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davis. This evening's programme was produced by Ronan Lawler. For myself, Shane Dawson and all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Do not go anywhere though, because Rachel May Hannah, the brilliant Rachel May, is up next with the new music show. But first, we're going to check in with the news desk.